It's 6:20. This is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. Another Texas congressman has decided not to seek re-election. Representative Lamar Smith, a San Antonio Republican, has been in office since the late 1980s. He says it's time for someone else to have the opportunity to serve the 21st District, which includes parts of San Antonio, Austin, and the Hill Country. Earlier this week, Representative Jeb Hensarling, a Dallas Republican, announced that he, too, will not be running for re-election. North Texans are celebrating the Day of the Dead this week. The holiday has exploded commercially. You can find costumes at party stores and home decor at Target. But KERA intern Miguel Perez headed to Oak Cliff to talk to people taking a more traditional approach to honoring their lost loved ones.
It's a week before Dia de Muertos. At the Oak Cliff Cultural Center, Selena White's tribute to her grandmother is coming together.
This is the old picture of her. So, a ton of flowers to make it look pretty, and then I have a few different skulls that I've painted.
Altars like this are at the heart of the holiday. The decorations have meaning, like the playing cards White adds.
She actually was a card player, and people would come to her house, and she would deal cards, and they would have like ranchera music all night long, and she would gamble all night.
Gerardo Robles, the center's programming coordinator, says altars are meant to attract the spirits of loved ones by setting up a party they cannot resist crashing. There's semi-sweet breads, skeleton figurines, paper garlands.
Sugar skulls to papel picado, to catrinas, calacas, the tree of life, the marigold flowers.
It's a way of celebrating life. Manuel Maroches owns a bakery on Davis Street. The altar inside practically spills over with photos, figurines, and toys.
You gather stuff that represents their whole life, de nacimiento a la muerte.
From birth to death, it's a belief rooted in indigenous Mexican cultures.
Most of their calendars were cyclical, so life also kind of reflects this idea. So you live your life, but then there's a second life that's connected to it. It doesn't end with the living.
That's Isabel Montemayor, an anthropologist at UT Arlington. She says the Chicano movement embraced the holiday in the 1960s as a way for Mexican Americans to reclaim their ancestry.
People started doing their homework and trying to understand their roots and where their traditions came from. And, you know, Dia de los Muertos was a perfect way to do that.
From there, it exploded. Today, even Disney's on board, releasing a film called Coco.
Welcome to the land of the dead.
Dr. Cleo, you gotta stay with me, boy.
This attention is conflicting for some.
Ooh, I have very opinionated mixed feelings.
Cindy Pedraza sits at a table at Coco Andre, a chocolate shop she co-owns with her mother, Andrea.
I feel like great. People are, you know, they're embracing us, but I think our culture is very easily used, and people take pieces that they like, but we're still kind of looked down upon, especially now in this time and era. We're targeted. We're not equals, but our traditions and our things bring money.
The pair make chocolate calaveras, or skulls, for Dia de Muertos, and their annual party attracts hundreds, including Mexican Americans rediscovering their traditions and immigrants who want to celebrate in their new community. Not everyone has the chance to make an altar. Back at the center, Robles says the names of loved ones are also written on paper butterflies, then strung up on garlands.
It's tradition that this time of year that you see monarch butterflies. And if you see one kind of pass by you, that's a loved one visiting you. Celebrating this culture, and especially making the altar itself, is such a unique process too, because you really do feel connected to the spirits. It really brings a different light to death.
Keeping the traditions behind Dia de Muertos alive and sharing them may make sure that light doesn't flicker out. For KERA News, this is Miguel Perez.
Jonathan Eaton's an opera pro. He's directed big-name companies like English National Opera and the New York City Opera. His work was broadcast nationwide on the PBS program Great Performances Live from Lincoln Center. Now, he's at UNT leading its opera program, and this week, making his directing debut in Denton. For the latest Art and Seek Artist Spotlight, Jerome Weeks sat in on rehearsal.
So, you need to put it on the table. Good. Okay, put them back down.
Jonathan Eaton's on stage in UNT's Murchison Performing Arts Center. He's working with seven cute but easily distracted kids. Kids from 4 years old to 8. He's trying to get them to stand up on cue and hold up placards painted like brightly colored flowers. They're all part of a giant garden in the Magic Flute. The Mozart opera is Eden's directing debut at UNT.
Turn around the other way. That's it. So I'm going to shout out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Here we go.
At times, all this could seem like a long way from Lincoln Center.
Funnily enough, being creatively satisfied doesn't depend on the glamour of the opera house or the fame of the singers. It depends on that strange magic that happens when you get a performer who's so connected to the moment and its musical expression that there's a sort of perfect beauty.
Besides being able to teach 7 months a year at UNT, for 16 years, Eaton has both managed and directed the Pittsburgh Festival Opera. Now he is able to quit the business side but remain artistic director. That means, he says, he gets all the fun and none of the fundraising hassles.
Then I can go and moonlight in big houses every now and again and teach a bit too, pass on the torch. I'm a lucky guy. And here I am in Texas. Who could be more lucky?
Eaton is 62. He spent his childhood in East Africa when it was still part of the British Empire. Eaton's father was in the British colonial service, and the service would pay half the fees of a child's education back in England. So at 8 years old, Eaton was shipped off to a classic British boarding school. These could be lonely, regimented places.
It's not exactly the best emotional education, but it was certainly the best musical education you could get.
That's because Eaton was admitted to King's College School in Cambridge and to its famous boys' choir. At 18, he caught the opera bug. He was a tour guide taking Americans on a crash visit to 18 European opera festivals. He was so impressed by a Kurt Weill opera, he wanted to stage it back in Cambridge. Eaton not only directed it, he designed it and conducted it.
And I think that was the first time I thought, huh, opera directing is it's a gift, actually.
In rehearsal for the Magic Flute, Eaton coaches soprano Kristen Sullivan. She's singing Der Höllerach, or Hell's Revenge, a famous and famously difficult aria.
In tempo, strict, precise rhythmical structure. Da-yam, ba-bam, ba-bam-bam. You can't let your long notes drag on.
Eaton is not like many theater directors who start staging operas while knowing little of the music. With his background, Eaton knows the scores. Choosing the Magic Flute, possibly the world's favorite opera, seems a safe choice for his Denton debut. But safety doesn't reflect his career or his inclinations. He was originally in the forefront of reimagining classics. He says too many of the old ways of staging them had become overly familiar. They obscured the human drama at their heart. And nowadays, Eaton is pushing new topics, new audiences, new forms.
I like to have the excitement of creating new works. So I've been able to do jazz operas, gospel operas, American operas, operas by women composers, and also site-specific works.
And in Denton, Eaton is all about new opera artists, even as young as four. Jerome Weeks, KERA News.
Learn more at artandseek.org. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.